But they, this is the one thing they said that made me say, I'm gonna get this shot. They all said, I felt like I was about to die.
I'm Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, founder of Grapevine Health and your host of the Grapevine Health Podcast, a podcast highlighting stories, health insights, and experiences of community members. We started this podcast because too often discussions and decision-making about health and the healthcare system don't include perspectives from the people we serve. So listeners, if you have a personal story or an experience from working in the community or on the front lines of healthcare, contact us and we might have you on the show. Today, I'm talking to John Johnson, storyteller, artist, and founder of Verbal Gymnastics. We had a fascinating conversation about his experiences using conversation and storytelling to help unite communities. So how are you, John?
I'm doing pretty good. We're living through a pandemic. So based upon that, everything's great.
Yeah, I've been following Verbal Gymnastics for a while. Why don't you tell people briefly what Verbal Gymnastics is? What do you do?
We are basically storytellers. And we believe that stories are like DNA. So when you share your DNA or your story with other people, it sticks to them and it makes you connected. We normally do live offerings where we go into spaces and we have crowds of 50 to 100 people. And we allow them to tell stories. Like a lot of times when you look at art, it's already curated. There's a story. The stories all come from the people. So we come into a space, maybe with a theme, but we turn the microphone over to the people. And there's just a lot of information when people tell their own personal story because they've lived in their bodies for however old they are. Like I'm 40. So I'm a 40-year-old expert in what it's like to be me, you know?
Yes. Well, definitely something I think healthcare providers need to remember as well, right?
Especially with healthcare providers, because like there's a key component in healthcare where they say elicit the patient's perspective. If folks have gone to medical school, that's such a big deal. And oftentimes, if you don't do that, there's so much information you're skipping over and you go strictly to your like clinical understanding and you don't know how the people feel. You don't know what influenced them to come in. You don't know what fears they have or the emotional status, you know, so. It is a good tool to like slow doctors down and make them interested and intrigued by their patients that they're serving.
I'm curious, when's the last time you had a visit with a doctor or a healthcare provider?
It's funny you say that. Like literally 2 days ago, I got my first COVID vaccine, a Pfizer. Whenever you tell them, like, you know, especially in the Black communities, they want to know who'd you get? Was it Johnson & Johnson? Was it Pfizer? Was it Moderna? Like our palette of language and linguistics has increased because of the names of these vaccines and the company's names and things that we probably, you know, Pfizer's been around for a while, but all of these other names, AstraZeneca, like all these different things.
Yeah.
Our vocabulary has grown, but there's also, you know, from the medical world, they're like, oh, these things are, you know, efficacy, all of these other terms that everyone's using to the lay person. These are new words, as well as what comes with that is the fears and the historical treatment that has come from the medical fields, particularly in the Black communities. Does that make sense? So anyway, my story will influence everything that I'm saying. So I go down to the Washington Convention Center because we're in Washington, D.C. And it's like, you know, it's like a herd. It's like people, everyone's kind of going into the room and they're like maybe 40 people get vaccinated at a time. And then beside that's the observation room where you have to sit for 15 minutes. So if, you know, I already have some reservations just being a Black man in America, but like, you know, and all of the things you know, we had many conversations amongst my friends. Like one of my friends was like, man, every zombie movie I see starts out like this, you know?
With somebody getting a vaccine, you mean, or what?
Yeah, he was just saying every zombie movie starts out with like some mass vaccinations and then everyone becomes zombies, you know? He was saying it kind of jokingly, but he also was like, he said, I'm not getting the vaccine because of that. Like, it just doesn't make, you know, I'm a little skeptical. And this guy has a PhD and that's how he feels. And then there are people who have legitimate, I'm not saying his isn't legitimate. He definitely needs to be validated and heard. But then there are folks who talk about the Tuskegee experiment or they talk about having a bad interaction in the medical field, whether it's you know, your doctor think you have a high pain tolerance, or these assumptions about you that they remember and they have experienced since, you know, interacting with the health industry. So this story is the story, because this is like, no, like, so I go in, you know, I'm a little like, oh, okay, we got to go through all this. Like, you know, okay, the observation room, I'm looking like no one's passing out. That's cool. All right. You know,
like, so far, so good.
And I end up getting a Black woman who, and I cracked this joke about, like, I'm only here for the colorful Band-Aids, you know, the stickers with the cartoons on them. And she laughs and chuckles. And then I mentioned, you know, similar to the story I'm telling now, I was like, you know, a lot of Black folks, because I look around too at Washington Convention, I'm like, there's some Black folks there, but we're still the minority in the room. Like, that's my own little census snapshot. I'm sure there've been a whole bunch of times where Black folks have come through there. But as when I was in there 2 days ago, there weren't too many Black folks there. And so I kind of talked to her about that. And she's like, yeah, you know? And I was like, well, can I ask you a personal question? I was like, are you vaccinated? She was like, no. I'm like, hold up, you're putting this in my arm and you're not vaccinated. Like, you know, I was like, well, tell me why. And so she goes on to say that her father died of liver cancer 3 years ago, and she's mad at the healthcare industry. She's like, I'm mad at the healthcare industry, so I don't want to participate in stuff like this yet. But then she goes on to say, but I'm in the healthcare industry to prevent this from happening to other people. You know what I'm saying? So she's choosing to be a healthcare professional because she doesn't want anyone else to have the same experience she had with feeling like her dad wasn't cared for. But she also is choosing not to get the vaccine because she's mad at the healthcare industry of how they treated her father. And I was like, that is being Black in America. That is like, when you talk to other people about the police, they're like, what do you mean? The police are there to protect. But you're like, you don't see what the police officers have done to people, sicking dogs on them since the civil rights movement, and how, you know, they interact. Because in your mind, they're there for safety because they may have treated you safely for a number of years, and they've done more good than they've done harm. While another community may feel like they've done more harm than they've done good. You know what I mean? So that is indicative of the conversations that need to be had in our community, whether it's something like, oh, every zombie movie I've seen is this, or the story that this woman is telling about her father and how she's traumatized from it. And it may prevent her from, you know, being safe, being a medical professional, not being vaccinated because she's still upset of what happened to her dad.
Wow, that's fascinating. So what do you think of that? I mean, as you listen to these stories and reflect on this.
Okay, so I'm gonna give it, I have to give this balance. So when we do playback theater, we let any story emerge, whether it's the story that I disagree with the every zombie movie statement, but that story still needs to be heard because then someone else will give a counterbalance to that story. And an example would be in my community, their members called ANCs, Advisory Neighborhood Commissioners. And they kind of represent each little community, and they get a lot of information from the government, and they disseminate information. So people, you know, whether it's you just need a speed bump in your community or you're advocating for more, healthier food stores and, you know, I mean, grocery stores in your community. Anyway, mm-hmm. This woman who's an ANC, she's over 65. Her name is Lyndia Johnston. She tells a story about how She tells two stories. She's calling all the seniors to get them to come to the CVS and get their vaccinations. And her premise is like, yo, when I come out of these vaccines, I see all these white people lined up to get the vaccines. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, this is the story that needs to be told in her community in order for her to get her community members to trust it. It still is, again, indicative of being in America, where just because white people want something, then you're saying, oh, well, that must mean it's safe and we should go get it. You know what I mean? Like, but that's the narrative she was saying. But the other story that she tells that I think is really significant and needs to be echoed is she says she remember when polio was around. And she says she was a little girl and she remember lining up in front of her elementary school, going into the nurse's office, and they must have put the vaccine on a sugar cube. And so they put the polio vaccine on a sugar cube. She had to put it in her mouth, and the nurse would let her go when she saw all the sugar dissolve in her mouth. And now we don't talk about polio. So that's where her confidence in the medical field lies. And then I talked to my mom about it. She's like, yeah, I remember that. I talked to a couple of elders. They're like, oh, yeah, I got the shot, though. Like, so then you start to hear all of these times when people who we trust have lived through a pandemic, something was dangerous, and it was wiping people out, very similar to what COVID is doing now. And they remember it going away because there was some medical intervention. Mm-hmm. that story is the one that needs to be told.
Yeah, to get people to trust vaccines and the fact that vaccines actually save lives, right?
Well, and it's coming from somebody you trust. You know, we trust our ANC members. I trust my mama. You know what I mean? You know, it's equally as important as Kamala getting the shot at UMC. You know what I'm saying? Like your local trust. And because we don't, you know, Black folks, we don't trust CNBC and Fox. And, you know, we don't feel connected to those media outlets. We have a different way sometimes in the way that we receive data and information. And whether it's true or not, we hold that in high regards, and it would determine whether or not we do or don't do things.
Yeah. I appreciate your comments about trust and how important the messengers are. But let's pivot a little bit and talk about the young people, because I know you interact with our youth and younger people quite a lot. And I'm interested to hear what you are hearing from them during the pandemic, because as you probably know, we still have a challenge with young people not really heeding public health advice related to the pandemic. So what are you hearing, and what do you think are some of the approaches we should be using to reach them or get them to be part of the solution to get us out of this pandemic?
Adults are always asking, you know, what are young people thinking? I mean, you definitely have to have youth advocates. You have to figure out who young people listen to.
Right. Who is that?
Right. Other young people. and as of right now, there isn't a vaccine for young people. So that's another thing that's just.
Let's just talk about the people who are between 18 and 30. What about that group? Because the vaccine rates are low. Also, just walking around in the community, seeing them not wearing masks, or even telling me,
right,
this isn't real, or I don't, you know, I'm not affected by it. So what are you hearing in that group?
Well, so again, I think people have to be validated from where they are. You know what I mean? And so if you come from a punitive standpoint, then young people don't, you know, anytime adult was being punitive, they don't like that, you know? And young people just tend to be healthier. So, you know, all ailments, whether it's, you know, smoking, drinking, high blood pressure, all of these things that tend to affect you if you don't take care of your body in the age range. Normally, they don't heed that advice. They're like, I'm eating bacon and drinking beer. You know what I'm saying? Like, because I'm young and I'm youthful and I don't have these, you know, they aren't pressing health issues right now. And I think that always existed. I think COVID now is just allowing us to see it more. But young people just don't want to heed to anything if it's not directly in front of their face. So you will have to find advocates, you know. So I'm gonna tell you my personal story. So again, I'm 40.
Mm-hmm.
Every guy in my age range who was vulnerable enough, because at first when folks got sick, it was a little shame associated with it. You know what I mean? Almost like right. HIV and AIDS. Like no one wanted to say, "Oh, I got COVID. It got me."
Right.
You know what I mean? But you know, once you get closer to folks and they share, like I've talked to four men, and all of them say all of them were in my age range. And every single one of them recovered. But this is the one thing they said that made me say, I'm gonna go get this shot. They all said, I felt like I was about to die.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, what? Like, yeah, man. Like I was calling my friends, like take care of my family. And it's like, I felt like I was about to die. And I was like, well, okay, whatever these side effects are that may come from this, like I'd rather have the chills for a little bit, but I don't wanna like, And when another person tells you that, you can hear it in their voice. Like they went back to that time where they was like, I'm done. Like, I can't believe, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, you know what? If there's an opportunity. And then, and one other thing. So that was the main thing. The other thing is I'm an artist. And so I talked to a lot of, you know, and recently I've been having like these international connections. And so I had some artists in Scotland, and I was kind of telling them like the Black experience. I was like, you know, we don't trust it. Like we probably, you know, we're holding back on this vaccine. We're going to wait and watch. The teacher just got it. So we're going to see if any of them passed out and then we might get it. They understood Tuskegee experiment. They understood, you know, racism and everything. But then they were kind of, I knew from their own lens, they were looking at the American privilege I had. Like, oh, you have access to this vaccine and you're not taking it. Like, yeah, I hear all the other stuff you're saying, but we want more access to it over here. You have access and you're like, yeah, I got three different choices. You don't know if you want to use it. Like to them, it's just like, I'm kind of whining it. Like, oh, I don't know which one. Is it Johnson & Johnson? Oh, no. You know, like, so they were being nice and polite about it, but they were just kind of like, we hear you, but can we take those vaccines that you don't want? Like, we'll take the risk. We'll take that chance because we know our family's in the hospital too. We know we're losing a lot of people too. And let me just hammer this point home with another story, because I am a storyteller. A lot of people know about George Washington Carver, the Peanut Man, right? We know George Washington Carver. And how wonderful he was. And there's even stories that George Washington Carver, he introduced Ford to the idea of a plant. You know what I mean? Like the plant, the way the cars are reproduced. And the Ford family gives money to Tuskegee every year because of, you know, they were so grateful for his introducing their Henry Ford to this idea. And so in the African-American community, we celebrate George Washington Carver too. But when you really understand his story, which again is an American story, very similar to these other stories, it's kind of like this schizophrenic thing. We don't realize, there's a lot that you don't know. So he was adopted by a white family. I don't know if a lot of people don't know he was adopted by a white family.
I didn't family. Know that. Yeah.
He was from a large family and they adopted him. And so he went and they lived like way in middle America somewhere. And so he always was a black boy, a little black boy going to white institutions. The family who adopted him lived in an all white environment. And so he excelled in all these academic institutions and became Dr. George Washington Carver, which we applaud. And that's the story that all black people are like, the Peanut Man, Dr. George Washington Carver. And then the narrative is education is important. Like, that's the way you get out of your situation. Education is important. That's the narrative behind it. But this is what they don't tell you. The family that adopted George Washington Carver had their own biological child, a daughter. They had one request before they adopted George Washington Carver. They were afraid that George Washington Carver was going to rape their daughter. So they asked that he be castrated.
What?
So George Washington Carver was castrated as a young boy by the same family who adopted him and put him through all of those academic institutions. So there's never been a George, there's no other Carvers.
Wow.
Unless they came from his actual biological family.
Wow.
So even though they're saying they're giving him opportunity, they also eliminated any of his lineage, his potential lineage, if he chose to go their route. If you ever hear George Washington Carver, his voice is still high pitched. He never developed in the same way because he was castrated as a young man.
Oh.
The family that would probably say that they loved him. That's the American story. That's where we are right now. That is the trust that we have to get over. And that's the story that's not being told. So they'd rather not tell that story, but that story is important. That story is the Tuskegee experiment. That story is how every black person understands what that means. That woman who's talking about her father, like I'm in this field because it has done me so much harm and I'm trying to change it, but I still don't trust.
Wow, that's powerful. So during the pandemic, have you been out in the community storytelling?
So, I mean, I do a lot of listening because we can't, I mean, we do it on Zoom, but we can't do our live performances. So, but I mean, these are the stories that I'm hearing from my community. The story about the Miss Johnson getting the polio vaccine, which is encouraging for black people to get it. But then there's still trepidation. It's still like, hey, man, like, I just don't trust. Like, I've been to the doctor. I've seen them. And so one of the things that here's something I tell a physician. Cultural competency is another term that's been around for a while, right? Unfortunately, in the community like mine, we have, like, I feel like George Washington Carver would have been a genius if he was kept in his own community. So, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't his white family adopting him. He was going to be great wherever he was. You know, he was just, that was his destiny. You know what I'm saying? He was destined to do that. So that's the theory behind that. Not that, you know, these folks gave him access. He was going to be a brilliant person regardless of where he was.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't produce a lot of physicians in our communities east of the
river. Right.
You know, I'm not saying people aren't successful. So most of those folks are coming from other places. And if I come from a wine culture and then I come into your office and I say, I drink a glass of wine every day, you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. You need to relax. You must have a stressful job. If I come from a cannabis consuming culture and I say, I smoke a joint every day, you may treat me as a drug addict. I may be reluctant to tell you that I do it because I feel like I've seen, you know, I know the rhythm of folks who are not from my culture or my community. Therefore, you can't serve me correctly. You see what I'm saying? So a lot of times I try to invite the physicians into these conversations where they are the minority. So if we have a playback show and there are 50 people or 100 people, there may be one physician there. You know what I mean? And they can just listen. and can learn so they can say, oh, this is that community's cadence. This is their rhythm. This is what they believe. This is what they don't believe. And therefore, then you can serve them better. Because otherwise you come in with some preconceived notions and you can't serve someone if you don't know what their culture is, or then they're reluctant to tell you or trust you and tell you their story.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for your work. I'm really looking forward to us collaborating on some of those conversations you're talking about and being the doctor who's listening. So thanks so much for talking to me today.
Hey, thank you.
That was John Johnson, founder of Verbal Gymnastics, offering his insights about how language, conversation, and listening can help heal our communities.
Thanks for listening to the Grapevine Health Podcast. Our producer is Nicholas Elias. Please like us on social media. You can find us at Grapevine Health on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, and on Twitter at Health Grapevine. Until next time, I'm Dr. Lisa, signing off.